working 17 hours a day, and my credit score got hit. I lost my house. I ended up losing my house, my car. My car got repoed. Couldn't even afford my cell phone bill anymore, my Verizon bill, so I switched to T-Mobile. I'm still at T-Mobile now.
And this is right after you got rid of the restaurant.
Yes, I sold the restaurant for a tiny, tiny amount, both of them. And, and I carried this $400,000 in debt. I paid it off, actually, the whole thing, like a year ago.
All right, everyone, welcome back to Business Stories with Benjamin Saylor, except Saylor isn't here today with us. She's watching the baby at home. Today, we're meeting with the Alex Lovely. We're excited to meet with him. And Alex is a master in real estate acquisition in creative debt financing. So we're excited to talk to him about that. He owns 800 plus units in real estate. So Alex has created himself quite a portfolio, and we're here to hear about his story. So Alex, thank you. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you. Thank you for such kind words.
Yeah, of course. The main thing I'm interested in is, 20-year-old Alex, who were you and how did you become into who you are now? You know, what made you want to do the things you're doing?
All right, so 20 years old, I guess I would be 2 years into college. A really big part of my life, that really important highlight point in my life, was when I joined my fraternity. So shout out to Teak over at Rutgers Newark, my big brother Travis. In that space, I think I really learned that I had a passion and a calling for mentoring and coaching. I just really enjoyed bringing younger brothers into the house, teaching them the traditions and the principles of our fraternity. And, by being a mentor actually propels me to be at a much higher version of that too. It pulls me to it. So I always say there's two different forces. One, you're pushing yourself, and the other one is where you pull yourself. So I guess that's when I first learned when you coach and mentor somebody, there's a pulling force. And it makes it easier for you, because when you get up in the morning, the pushing requires some kind of battery and willpower that comes from you inside, right? So
yeah,
that gets exhausting if we're always pushing. But when something else is pulling you to it, just like how I do a lot of podcasts and Zoom calls and things like that, I say I'm going to do it, all these people are going to show up. There is no, do I feel like doing it or do I not?
Yeah.
I'm being pulled right to it, right? So I think that I learned that. That was a really highlight piece in my life then.
So how would you say you went about learning that then? Who taught you that? Or did you just do it by committing to stuff, overcommitting, and then just overperforming?
Overcommitting.
Right, so, there you go.
A big part was just being in the right place, being in the right place and taking a chance on myself, joining a fraternity. That's not something that everybody does either.
Yeah.
And it's not something easy to get into.
Where did you go to college?
Right, so I went to college, Rutgers.
Rutgers.
New Jersey.
Oh, okay, Rutgers.
Rutgers, Newark.
What did you go there to study?
For the first 3 years, I went for, I don't even know. I didn't even declare a major. it's kind of a little bit later on that I declared, finance first. And I was like, no, I don't like it. And I went marketing. So I went to business school there.
Okay.
But, for anybody that is, that wants to hear a funny story, I was in college for 4 presidential elections.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
So you were in college for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Long time.
So I was in college for a long time. I turned out great. So for anybody out there that's struggling, thinking, even if it's your kids or whoever, you don't have to worry. Life is, God takes care of everything.
So would you recommend, an 18-year-old coming out of high school to go to college?
Oh, man. College. I don't really recall much of anything that I learned in the classrooms, but I think it's important for social growth, emotional growth, being around people. At that time, I think I learned a lot, and I wouldn't trade that for anything, for sure.
Gotcha. Okay, yeah, I've never really thought about it that way.
Yeah.
For me, college is always I dropped out of college.
Yeah.
I only went for a semester.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, this is crap. I'm not learning anything. I also took it online, so I wasn't there. So that also could change things. But then, like I told you, I started getting into plumbing and I started making a bunch of money doing that. Mm-hmm. So then I just decided not to go.
Network is your net worth.
Yeah.
Right. So
yeah, 100%.
Even in college, I was very clear that joining this fraternity was going to expand my network.
So
we taught that.
You knew that before you went into college.
I didn't know that before going to college, but joining my fraternity, they actually emphasized that, you know, how large the network is and what you can open yourself and tap yourself into. So that was a big part of learning when I came to college too.
Gotcha. So yeah. You were able to come across a group of people who taught you that your network is your net worth. And yes. That's awesome. That's great. You're able to, and you learned that what, 20, 22 years old. You went to college for what, 10 years? Four elections. So that would have been 16 years.
It was the end, the tail end of one, four presidents, sorry, not elections, but four presidential terms, I guess.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Yeah,
so tail end of one and the beginning of another.
Gotcha. Yeah. There you go. Okay. So you went to college, you graduated from there in marketing and business. Mm-hmm. And then, how did you get into real estate? You know, how did you get into what you're doing now mm-hmm. from then?
Yeah.
What's the middle story?
Again, I took a chance on myself on something, right? So in college, everybody's broke kids in college, had about $10,000 to my name from refund checks and things like that. And side business.
When you left college.
Maybe legal, maybe illegal, but I had some side businesses going. And I had about 10 grand. And, I read the book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, as probably most people have and inspired to do something after reading that book. Probably one of the most game-changing book for a lot of people, a lot of real estate professionals for sure. And afterwards, I was like, all right, what's the next step? I can't just read the book and do nothing. I'm an action taker by nature, you know? So I bought the $10,000 personal coaching program. You know, back in 2000,
from Robert.
Yeah, back in 2005, 10 grand is still a lot of money, you know, like,
yeah.
So I bought the Escape from the Rat Race, and I had a personal coach, and we created a whole plan of how I was going to exit the rat race. And for those of you guys that don't know what that is, it's just your passive income becomes greater than your expense, right? That's very simple terms of escaping the rat race. So I had a whole plan. This is my expenses. I need to buy a 3-unit property, and it needs to generate this, pays for itself, pays for my living, my car, cell phone, whatever, done with the rat race, right? And so that's the plan that I followed. And you know, when I was 26, I bought my first triplex in Newark, New Jersey, and it did that, and then the rest just kind of extended from there.
Wow. So 26, mm-hmm. you bought your first triplex, mm-hmm. and then from there on out, you just started buying bigger units, or did you stick pretty small at first, or when was your first bigger unit deal, would you say?
The largest, I mean, I stayed in the residential single family for a while. You know, maybe 3 years ago, I started tapping into commercial, multifamily, multi-storage, multi-units. And it's really, I organically really grew into, again, you know, shout out to Grant Cardone and his program. Like his mastermind had put me in touch with other people that wanted to do the same thing, you know. I learned some great things in there for sure, but there's a point where you grow out of it because most of that is for beginners, right? But the people that I met in there, that's game changing. So again, back to this, your network thing, right? And I knew that. So when I went in there, I wasn't going in to buy a course like, you know, show me what's in it for me, right? I knew specifically I'm going in there to network. I'm going in there to find somebody that's going to change my life. I'm not in here to see if this course is worth it for me or not, or this mastermind's worth it. It's up to me to make it worth it. So I meet five people. We did our first deal together. I mean, I can't even put a price tag on that, you know, in that relationship. And it still continues to pay off. So it's like an investment that I made in a program, in a mastermind, came out with five partners, and I continue to meet great people in that community. You know, I just now tap into multiple different types of communities.
Wow. Mm-hmm. So the money you put forward for those events is a huge investment into what's created who you are. You know, $5,000 to a new Grant Cardone
seminar is 100%. When I first started, yeah, going to the seminars, that was a cost. Then it was $30,000 to join the mastermind. Like, I don't have just free $30,000 sitting around. So let me pay $5,000 a month. You know what I mean? I can make that happen. And that is, you know, when we make that type of commitment for ourselves, what happens is you're telling yourself you're worth that investment. And by putting yourself in that position, you now go out and focus on how do I make the money to get the $5,000, to pay the five extra grand. See, that level of energy, we can all tap into that. But on the other side, some people will use that same energy and go into, was the $5,000 worth it?
Yeah.
You know, what am I getting out of it? See, it's the same amount of energy that you're calling forth, but one generates more money and the other one actually keeps you playing smaller. And so it's the same event that's happening. It's a neutral event, but how you think about it, how you think about all things will determine like the results that you're going to get, you know? So from there, I spent that first year, 30 grand into that mastermind. My income grew.
And this was back in when?
Like 3 years ago. It's not even that long.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, I'll share the story of my failures and my successes and all of that for sure. I mean, I've hit rock bottom and came back just because of information that you learn cannot be taken from you. Money, material, cars, houses, these are things that can be taken away. But what you learn in your mind and what you understand about networking, real estate, these things can't be taken away. And you can call on that anytime.
Yeah. And your relationships.
Yeah. People, your relationships. I mean,
people can't
how you do your relationships. One of the, you know, last year I got a chance to officiate a wedding.
Oh, really?
And
how was that?
That's awesome. You got to think, in order for someone to have you officiate a wedding, you had to have invested so much into that relationship. Now, can we all do that with all of our relationships? Like that I am here to be there for you so much that you're going to have me officiate your wedding. Think about what that would take.
Yeah, wow.
From you as a person.
Yeah.
To be there and show up for somebody constantly.
Wow.
Yeah,
that's commitment as a friend. I've never been able to do that.
I know. As a friend, as a business partner, as a son, as a daughter, as a, you know, a parent. You know, the way you do one thing, the way you do one relationship can transfer into how you do everything else.
Yeah. And that comes from taking that relationship and committing yourself to it and doing what you say you're going to do with your commitments.
Yeah. My intentions is I'm going to be such a stand for you and show up for you so much that when you're getting married, you're going to be like, Alex, you're going to officiate.
Yeah. I wouldn't want anyone else.
It's just a mindset. I mean, it's not like it's not like there's a manipulation going on, but in my own mind, that's how I want to show up for people, you know? So.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. That's awesome.
Yeah.
So, and you would say, you know, going back to, you know, coming out of college, being in your fraternity, once you left college and you got out of your fraternity and you got out on your own, how were you able to keep that mindset? Because a lot of people will go to these events, they'll get all of this information and they'll get on this huge business high. Oh, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. And then they'll just go right back to where they were and who they were.
This is why I tell everybody, like, look, you get on this high, you want to do a million different things. No, pick one thing that you're going to be able to do, the smallest thing that you can do. And if you can do it consistently, it will change your life forever. Like, all you're trying to figure out is how you can be consistent. Consistency overcomes everything. You know, like, you're doing this podcast, like, you might hit roadblocks. You will hit roadblocks. You will hit a wall where you're like, I don't know what to do next. But just being consistent, doing it, there will be moments where breakthrough happens, right? So when you leave a conference, what are you going to do? One thing that's going to change your life forever. Is it waking up earlier in the morning? Is it going to sleep a little bit earlier? Right. These are all things. If your conversations, I don't have enough time, then wake up an hour earlier, sleep an hour later, you know, focus on one small thing that can interrupt your thinking pattern. And if you can do that, that's going to go a long way. Gotcha. So if it's underwriting one deal, if it's I'm going to, you know, connect with one new person a week, it doesn't have to be grand. Like, to change our lives and change your own destiny is not, you don't need to make a, you know, Gandhi or Mother Teresa-esque type of impact. It's just very small things done over a long period of time goes a really long way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. Yeah. So we talked a little bit earlier before the podcast about, you know, your ultimate goal with what you're doing now. And you've created a debt fund is what you call it, correct? How did you get into that? What's the story behind getting into that from?
Wow. Okay. So let's kind of just start for most people and myself. You know, you start in real estate, you want to get in the game. You might start wholesale, lease options, arbitraging, Airbnb arbitraging, right? You want to build some sort of income, and then you go into owning single families and stuff like that. Then you eventually graduate to you're owning 2 units, 3 units, 4 units, small multifamily. And at some point, you got to make the jump to the bigger game, right? 12 units, 20 units, 100 units, 200, 400 units. You got to make that jump. But to make that jump, you will need people. You will need people to help you operate it, run it, do your taxes, attorney stuff, legal stuff. You'll need people to come up with capital that believes in you. You're going to need people to operate it. You know, all of these things are, it requires a team now. In order for you to level up, you have to have a team. So I made the choice. I made the decision that I'm going to level up from all my single families and small multifamilies. And I'm going to get rid of those and I'm going to step into the bigger game. Once you go into the bigger game, you never really go back, right? When you've gone and owned multiple properties and you're running them, you're not going to go back to wholesaling. And you're just really not going to do that. It's too much work for the returns that you're getting, because your time becomes more valuable as you scale up in the game. Then you get into larger units and you're like, okay, well, single families seem extremely risky. It's one unit. If I got more doors, if I got 100 doors, one unit goes empty, I don't even feel the difference. If you got one house, every month that it's not occupied, it basically eats all of your income for the year. Right? So as you scale up, you're like, I'm not going to go back that way. And at the highest level of investments and of this game is funds, right? You have your Vanguard, Fidelity, State Street, BlackRock, right? These are, they play at the highest level. They own basically all the S&P 500 companies out there. They have heavy influence on every decision that's made, all business decisions. And then everybody's investing into the funds. So at the highest level is private equity, is these funds. And so I met in one of my deals, actually, I met somebody that plays at that level. And I got to share my vision. I'm always cultivating and growing my vision. And, you know, the Tony Hsieh estate in Las Vegas. I just happened to stumble across Delivering Happiness. And I'm here in Las Vegas. Everyone's talking to me about downtown Fremont, of how they want to create businesses and things over there. And they talked about Tony. And I was like, okay, well, what's the problem here? Why can't we do something about it? Tony passed away before he could, his vision could be realized. And so I was like, all right, well, somebody needs to carry the torch. Let me start to share this idea of what I want to do, redeveloping an entire downtown, once in a lifetime opportunity. This is a blank canvas. And as more people heard the vision and people started to answer the call, and it just grew and grew and grew. And when I met my partner, Justin, Justin Godore, he basically was like talking to me about debt, private debt. Nope, most people don't know about private debt. They think it's just private hard money. It's not. You know, it plays in a whole different realm. If you're buying a property, let's say a multifamily, you're going to shop with brokers, lenders from Marcus Millichap, Cushman Wakefield, like all these different players, they're shopping at the same department store. You know, not that it's bad. I mean, they get you the loans that you get, but now your underwriting becomes only what's available in those small amount of loan packages. In the private sector side, the private equity side, there's over 300,000 different loan packages, loan products. The more you know about them, the more you can put deals together. And we're doing a deal right now where I'm like, okay, well, if my investors are the most expensive piece of the capital stack, right? Capital stack is all the money it takes to buy this deal. You know, typically it's you have your mortgage and then you have your investors or you have your down payment. That's what makes up a capital stack. But what about stacking a whole bunch of different options together? You know, this is me learning this. I'm like, all right, now I got to take it out to the world, because my calling is always sharing. Like, I want to go somewhere with everybody. I don't want to get to the top of the mountain by myself. You know, so how do I share? How do I mentor people about it? How do I bring this information out so more people can be doing it? You know, and most people, you know, a lot of educational programs out there, they're focused on the exchange of the money for a mentorship product. And I think education should be free. But, you know, for some people, they have to pay attention. So, but we'll keep it free. And I want partners. I don't want to be teaching you these things just for no reason. I want you to learn so that we can be partners. We can do deals together. We can think on the same wavelength. That's my intention when I teach, so that I can bring you up to where I'm at and we can do deals. And then you can help more people and I can help more people. So that idea grew. It grew massively. And now you know, his family has been doing lending and playing in the private equity side for a long time.
Justin.
Yeah. So just with himself, you know, him and his family, they're not very private people. They don't want to be publicly known. And I was like, let's take it out to the world. There's a need that's coming in this country. $2.7 trillion of real estate coming, their loans coming due. And there's a lot of people that are scared, right? And the reason is the way the banks are tightening, right? Your department store of these loans, there's only so much. They're all doing the same thing. They're giving you less leverage. And what that means is you have a deal, $10 million deal. Let's say you bought it with 70% loan to value. That means you have $7 million. You bought a $10 million deal. You brought $3 million to the deal. Awesome. Now your loan is coming due and the bank's like, same. So we're giving you the same evaluation for your building. Nothing's changed. Operations, everything is good, but your loan is coming due. We can't give you 70% anymore. We're going to give you 55%. As an operator, you did nothing wrong. You could have ran this deal so well, but you're at the mercy of the bank.
Yeah, there's nothing.
And you have to inject now $1.5 million because now you're getting 5.5, yeah. 55%. Did nothing wrong, and you have to come up with $1.5 million.
Just to keep the deal alive.
Just to keep the deal alive. So what do they do? Do they sell it? Yes, they're going to sell it. A lot of people are going to sell, and that's why there's a great opportunity. They're going to sell it for $9 million, $8 million, less than what they bought it for, just to at least recoup some money, keep their investors, you know, instead of losing it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because when the loan comes due, there's nothing you can do about it.
Yeah, the loan comes due, yeah.
Now, on the private equity side, if you can find different types of capital to get you back up to that 70% LTV to keep your deal alive, this is the time to be very creative, right? Even if you have to pay a little more interest just to get that there.
Yeah.
Because where are you going to come up with the $1.5 million? It's either going to come out of your pocket or you got to do a capital call with your investors, and they're not going to be very happy.
Yeah.
Investors do not want capital
call. They don't want to.
You know, even though they signed the contract, they signed the PPM in the beginning that a capital call is possible, right? That means you have to, everybody's got to fork up money if the deal is struggling.
And the hardest part about a capital call too is with them forking up money, they don't get any more stake either.
No, they don't.
You know, it's like they just have to put in more money to keep their same investment.
Yep.
So yeah, I can see how that'd be really frustrating.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
Man, you just gave a whole bunch of information that, like, yeah, really a lot of stuff that I don't know.
It's seriously a lot, but you know, there are just missing pieces of the puzzle for everyone. As you start to listen and learn these things, more pieces of the puzzle starts opening up, and now you see deals differently. You see investors differently. You see the debt differently. You see the market differently. You can see that there's a possibility for the economy not to tank. Right, because the way it's going to tank if banks start taking all these properties back. Banks do not want these properties, right? You have BlackRock just dishing offices and whatever right back to the bank because they're like, we can't cover the loan, but they're big enough that it doesn't hurt them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so like, here, bank, you take it back. An asset going back to the bank, a property going back to the bank, goes from an asset to a liability
to the bank.
To the bank.
Yeah.
Because the asset is that the bank is collecting money from
exactly,
the interest.
Exactly, yep, from the interest.
Once they take a property, money's got to go out to run this property, right? And they got to prepare it, set it up, sell it, energy, money, and now goes outwards for the bank. And then also their books. They have to keep a certain balance. This is how banks work. They have to do fractional lending. So they have to keep a certain balance. If all these properties come back, they're less liquid, and they're holding all these properties, what happens is a bank goes under.
Yeah.
And so enough of this happens. All the little banks go under, right? We have one kind of small bank go under, the Silicon Valley Bank. Right? They went under. They're big, but they went under. That going under triggered so many different things happening. Now imagine all the other little banks start doing that. I mean, there's going to be a consolidation happening. During that period of consolidation, everyone's going to get hurt. Unemployment's going to skyrocket.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of problems.
Interest rates going to fly up. Oh, there is definitely going to be a lot of this is every time that happens, the gap between the wealthy and the not wealthy widens.
It gets bigger.
It gets bigger.
It's way bigger.
Because now the banks, these big banks come down and scoop up everything. They scoop up all the things, and who pays for it? The government, taxpayers pay for it. They're like, yeah, we'll come in, we'll step in, but you got to give me all these assets and all these banks. We'll run it. You know, we'll take it over. We'll keep it alive. we want pennies on the dollar on these things.
And, yeah,
and then it turns back around and all of a sudden, boom, they 1,000x, 1,000,000x their money. Right. So that's what happens. And then it goes back into a cycle. They start calling for decentralizing bring that together. Right. Like the consolidations. They want the opposite. So now more small banks and local banks open back up. It's just a cycle that keeps happening. But until you play at the highest level, you don't really see that cycle. You're just a victim to the cycle because you can't see it. You can't see where it's going. So as we learn to play at the highest level of this game, and for me, and by no means I'm an expert. I see it.
You're just, yeah.
I see clearly what's happening.
What everyone is saying. And...
Yeah, and I want to do something that disrupts the cycle. That's why I've created the model and the fund that we have. So debt being the largest business and industry in the world, especially in the US, it makes sense for us to start a debt fund. You know, leveraging the relationships that my partner's family has built internationally, and we create a debt fund. We come out and we rescue these deals that are in trouble. Right? We help them understand, how do you keep your deal alive? Right? What's the most important thing? Is it your interest rate, or is it your loan to value, or is it time? Right? What do you need? We can cater to you based on that. But, you know, you go to a regular bank, they're not catering to anything. This is what you get, and that's what you have. And you got to make a decision. Do I keep it? Do I do a capital call, or do I return it to the bank? That's your only choice. So on the private equity side, the private debt side, that's what we started. And we're actually going to be calling it an income fund, because as our investors come in, it's just 9-10% returns on your money. There's no equity play. It's a very simple play.
Yeah, gotcha. Just like a good investment for that.
Yeah.
So this debt or income fund that you're creating, you mentioned to me like it's never been done before. Mm-hmm. You're the first ones to be able to do this. Mm-hmm. And that is exactly raising capital. So you have this big old fund to then help people keep their deals. Mm-hmm. That's a really good idea.
So it's not that a debt fund or income fund never has been done before. It's the structure in which we're doing it has never been done.
Ah, okay, gotcha.
So I'll just typically out there, you have your large funds. What they do is they have a large fund, and then people's pensions and their 401ks and all of retirement funds go in there, and they do whatever they want. Unrestricted, buying companies, destroying companies, whatever they got to do to create profit. Right. And working with the government, they play on all of that side. So that's typically what you got. And if you're, you know, and these funds, they work with each other to scale up and make more money. What we're going to do is we are going to build another layer. There's a very popular way of creating fund to funds now. Right. So it's a very popular thing out there. But at the end of the day, fund to funds now just becomes a loophole for people to raise capital for other deals. And that's what's going on. I mean, that's just being taught. So I'm going to take that whole idea and shift it. I'm going to say, hey, we're creating a fund. We're going to build you the fund to fund. Okay. People that have no idea how to run one, it's okay. We build it for you. Our financial management and wealth team does the admin work, does the distributions, onboardings, and all that for you. CPA team does the K-1s and the accounting for you. Basically, your job is to learn how this game works. And you bring investors in. It's great returns for your investor anyways. All right, so that's the model itself is now to build like a done-for-you fund that is like a mimic of ours. Like we're giving you a place to put it. It's not like you go make the decision and invest in wherever and it's chaos. It's a wild, wild west again. Right? It's a very organized structure. We also will have a proprietary blockchain product. I think this is part of the game-changing part of it is, every transaction, every record, everything is recorded. You can't add zeros, take away zeros. That level of accountability and transparency should have been something that is demanded from the start, right? So I think blockchain was created, cryptocurrencies came out of that, but blockchain was created as a way to keep contracts, smart contracts. And, you know, Wall Street and these funds probably saw it and was like, whoa, we don't want that. We don't want anyone to have this idea of wanting us to use that. So let's go create all these coins and make all this fuss and create this giant smoke screen so that people don't really know what blockchain really is.
Yeah.
Right. And now it becomes like some coin, you lose it. You know, and when you talk about blockchain, people are like, yeah, no, thanks. Crypto coins, bitcoins.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's not. It's a way of keeping contracts. So our proprietary product is called Trust Ledger. And imagine if every single investor out there, every person that has a 401k pension retirement account, they say, hey, before we invest with you, BlackRock, Vanguard, Fidelity, Wall Street, before we invest with you, you need to have a trust ledger. You should be operating from it. Why not? Right? Transparency, accountability. Why would you not want to have that? As an investor, we want that. Right? So that's, if that becomes a big demand and they start operating from that and they start using a trust ledger where they can't just finagle numbers and tell you things and have no explanations whatsoever, that's going to change the world. The way business is conducted around the world, when you keep somebody accountable, business is transparent. I think the world's going to change for the better. And just for that. And then we have other ways in which our fund-to-fund managers will, you know, earn money through referrals of loans and become kind of like our gatekeepers for loans that come in, you know, and then they're going to grow. They're going to grow into creating other fund master funds of their own, which, you know, will just be an extension of our model and our ecosystem. And then now our fund managers can say, hey, we have a warehouse fund that offers this type of return. And we have a debt fund or an income fund that offers this. And now they have an investor thesis or pitch that they can show to their investors where they can choose where they want to put their money. You know, obviously the structure is all the same. And the one thing that we're going to have with these funds is all of these funds will have to commit to some of their profits. I don't know what percent I'm going to call it yet, but they have to pledge to our nonprofit venture fund. And I think that's the heart and the center vision of everything is this nonprofit venture fund. And what we're doing with the nonprofit venture fund will start with working with teens that are aging out of the foster system, right? They don't have anywhere to go. They've been abandoned and passed around their whole life. They're going to get a job at McDonald's and they're going to end up homeless, right? And we need to heal that at the core. And then also that nonprofit fund will be working with kids and children that are rescued from human trafficking. You know, working with Paul Hutchinson and the Child Liberation Foundation. And we'll do the same thing for these kids. Now, the way that I envision it, and I'm calling forth, hopefully people that are listening to this podcast can chime in, right? Chime in and share your visions and whatever is coming through for you when you're hearing this is we have, my background is in NLP, transformational personal development background that, you know, works with how do you deal with your past stories and your past traumas and use it to empower yourself rather than become a victim of it, you know, rather than behaving from a place that's disempowered. So we're going to take that training and help these kids through that, finding, okay, my story and my past and being abandoned and all these things. Why have I went through that? You know, not that I'm a victim for, but how can I use it to harness it and do greater good? Right? There's now a path, a vision to becoming a contributing, thriving member of society. So they come in, they learn that. And then I teach another course called the Clarity Catalyst. That is to cultivate and find your passion through creativity, creative outlets, art, dance, whatever it may be. And then they're going to figure out a product that they're going to bring to market or service. What problem do you want to solve in this world? They're probably going to solve something that had to do with their past, right? And that's how it works. And then they go through our incubation program. We have founders that have exited 9, 10, 11 figures. CEOs, CFOs, CMOs of different companies will come in and mentor these kids how to take your product to market, how to be successful with it. And how much do you need for this to happen? Do all of that analysis. And then our nonprofit fund's going to say, okay, we like it. We're going to partner with you. And we fund that idea. And, you know, I believe the chances of it being successful will be a lot greater because the why behind it, the story is beautiful. The mentorship behind it is going to be, you know, class A, let's call it. And, you know, more people will be seeing will be helping push this product to market. And so when they become successful, the fund is profitable, even though it's a nonprofit, but it helps to sustain and run. So it's not just like money keep going out one way. And and what they're going to do is they're going to come back, right? People that are successful, they're going to want to help something. They're going to come back and become speakers and inspire and motivate other kids that are going through the same thing. Hey, I was there once. It's okay. Here's where I am. And this is what I'm going to do to help you. And they're going to be able to fill in all the other blind spots that I have, the other gaps of how to help these kids. And then the same thing will happen on the kids that are rescued from human trafficking. Right? It's going to be the same. Yeah. So that's where I'm going to land. That's my passion. That's the center of where we're at, of my vision.
That's amazing. That is amazing, man. What an amazing vision to be able to,
thank you,
you know, take and put all your time towards something like that. I love it. I want to talk a little bit more about the in-between time of kind of who you are now. When you graduate college, you invested in with Robert Kiyosaki. You mentioned that you eventually hit rock bottom and lost everything. How did you get there? And how did you get out of it?
Okay. All right. So, I mean, I tell this story sometimes, but this is it's just part of the journey of the ups and downs. You know, when I graduated college, I bought this property. I was like, oh man, I'm out of the rat race. But then what? You know, a couple hundred bucks, a couple thousand extra dollars every month is not going to get you anywhere. All right. So I'm like, okay, well, in the short period of time from when I bought the property to, you know, I think it was like right around 2010, 2 years later, Whole Foods decided they're going to open. My property jumped up from 220,000 to 660,000. And I'm like, oh my God, I got a lot of equity. So I pulled some equity out, and this was, you know, I graduated from college, and I'm like, I still want to be the man on campus. So I get kind of sucked into opening and taking over this restaurant in the center of our campus.
Okay.
So instead of just one, I ended up buying both of them and renovating the entire thing. It ended up costing me somewhere around $450,000, my partner and I. And we, you know, $450 in the hole before we even get started in the restaurant. We ran it. It's in the middle of the campus. Everybody knew who I was. So, you know, we did a lot. We did like $1 million a year. But nobody taught me how to run a restaurant.
Yeah.
Right? I didn't have a mentor for it. I mean, this is the big mistake.
What kind of restaurant was it?
So I had a, like, you know, coffee shop, sandwich shop in one and a ramen shop in the next one. So I just, you know, I didn't really know what I was doing. Ran into all sorts of different problems. Every mistake you could possibly make running a restaurant, I made. And, you know, we had great income still somehow to support a lot of it. But I didn't know how to run a business. I didn't know every quarter you needed to file and pay taxes. So, you know, I was like, wow, we're doing so well. At any given point, I would have $8,000, $9,000, $10,000 in cash in my pocket. I'm like, all right. And I go to Atlantic City and just blow it all. You know, this is in New Jersey. So, you know, I was like, oh yeah, a whole ton's going to come anyway. So I didn't know how to manage money. I didn't know how to run a restaurant. So at some point we started falling behind with our vendors. We started falling behind with our electric bill, you know, taxes, everything. And it's, once you get to that point, it's very hard to come back, you know, because now you're skimping on your orders of the food, and then now we don't have it, and we don't have it. Now the clients aren't happy, and the customers aren't happy. So now the business starts going down. And at some point, I was just like, I can't do it anymore. I was working 17 hours a day, and I just got rid of it. My credit score got hit. I lost my house. I ended up losing my house, my car. My car got repoed. Couldn't even afford my cell phone bill anymore, my Verizon bill, so I switched to T-Mobile. I'm still at T-Mobile now.
And this is right after you got rid of the restaurant.
Yes, so I sold the restaurant for a tiny, tiny amount, both of them. And, you know, and I carried this $400,000 in debt. I paid it off, actually, the whole thing, like a year ago. But packed all my stuff up, lost everything, moved down to Florida in a U-Haul truck, and I moved into this, like, probably 200-square-foot, like little unit. The Murphy bed comes down, front door doesn't open, close the front door, put the Murphy bed up, then I open and go out. And I have my 95-pound dog with me in there.
What kind of dog?
Tiny little thing, a Cane Corso. And so, you know, I was feeling sorry for myself for a while, and then I went into this transformational training, personal development program called Gratitude Training down in Florida. It was, you know, I started somewhere during the trainings, I was like, I'm no longer gonna be a victim to this story, right? Like, I can get myself out. I've spent thousands of hours learning real estate. I've bought real estate. I got out of the rat race. I paid for a program. It's valuable. It's valuable, right? This is knowledge that I said earlier in this show that, you know, that can't be taken from you. So I was like, all right, I'm going to put together some little real estate meetups and put it together, put it on Facebook groups and all these things down in Pompano Beach, Florida. And, you know, 20, 30 people would show up. And I would teach how to buy single family and the process of making money through real estate and why, you know, real estate is great. I think real estate is probably one of the has the highest amount of accidental millionaires. Like it's funny because people will buy a property and they won't even know what they're doing. And all of a sudden, boom, it's like a couple million dollars. I'm like, wow. So even if you're not cash flowing, real estate, a lot of accidental millionaires.
So if you want to be a millionaire, get into real estate.
I mean, it's fast. One way, right?
Like a for sure thing.
Nothing's for sure. Things can always happen. But if you buy a piece of property and you can survive for 30 years, yes, you will probably be a millionaire.
Yeah.
At some point in your life.
Uh-huh.
But that is still better than what you're going to get from your retirement funds, right?
Like
people's retirement accounts, they don't become millionaires after 40 years and they work their butts off the whole time. You know, but with a piece of real estate, if you buy it and you just let it sit there for 30 years, keep it alive, you know, at some point, probably be worth, you know, $1 million. Probably all real estate will be worth $1 million at some point with inflation. So, yeah, I started to teach people how to do that. And, you know, I went to another conference, Chris Krohn's conference, learned about partnerships in real estate. I was like, ooh, okay. That's actually where I got the idea to do, you know, meetups, because I didn't even know how to get myself out. 400,000 in the hole, 400 credit score, like, how am I supposed to buy real estate? And this is why when people tell me they don't have money, I never buy it. I'm like, you can do real estate without buying it. You just don't have the drive or the desire or the commitment to say, I'm going to do it. Because I had negative that amount. And I didn't have the credit score to qualify for anything. I was as low as you can get in the totem pole to be able to get real estate. However, it doesn't have to be yours. This is the most valuable lesson I learned, is that money, buying real estate requires money, requires someone to sign onto the loan, requires financials. None of those have to be yours, including operations. I don't know how to run a property. Doesn't have to be you either. Right? You put things together, you put people together to make it happen. So I did the meetups, and then I was saying, this is what we're doing. This is real estate and how you make money in it. I'm looking for a partner. First one, nobody. Second one, nobody. Third one that I did, one person raised his hand. He's like, I'll be your partner. I'll do it. And so we bought a property in Las Vegas and we did Airbnb on it. He put the money down. He signed on to the loan. I ran it. We did so well. Refinance, because I have strategies. I understand how to do it. He didn't know anything about real estate, but he had some money.
Mm-hmm.
Made him a lot of money. He immediately wanted to do it again. Told all of his friends. They started doing it with me. Within 3 years of that time, 3 years of me just being completely rock bottom, I was making $20,000 a month. I didn't put any money out to buy real estate, just partners.
Yeah, and you're making it.
20 grand a month. I'm like, I'm free again.
Yeah.
Even though I have this debt that I was paying every month, I didn't know anything about
bankruptcy. What was your monthly payment on the debt?
Like $5,000-$6,000 a month I was paying forever, you know? So that's why, like, man, a year ago, and I made some big chunks, $30,000, $40,000 when we sold properties and refinanced. But yeah, paid the whole thing off.
You know,
like a year and a half ago. I was like, oh my God, we'll clear this.
You probably felt so good. You're like, yeah, man, that thing in the past, it's gone.
It was really great.
And so you were able to overcome feeling like a victim from that situation.
Oh, totally.
And completely turn it around. And you chose, I'm just going to get rid of that.
It doesn't matter where you are financially. If you have the willingness to learn and to adopt a new mindset, this is what it takes. Wherever you are financially is because you've carried all the things you've learned up to this point. That's where you are. If you want to change from that, if you want to stop being the 9-to-5, if you want to have free time, then you have to reprogram. The old operating system doesn't work anymore. You have to put a new operating system in there. You can't just download more apps and think you're going to change. Your operating system does not handle these new apps. You have to change your entire mindset and your belief systems. This is why that personal development work is so important. You have to invest in yourself. Best investments that you can make. All right. So at that, when you get there, you know, your thinking and your relationship to money changes. Your thinking and relationship to partnership changes, because most people think, oh my God, I don't want partners. Think about all the bad things that could happen. Well, without partners, you're going to just be here. With people, with partners, you can go far. Right? So every single solution, anything that you want to buy, anything you want to own, wherever you want to go, it's going to be somebody that's going to open that door for you.
Yeah.
And if you can just embrace that thing, that it's going to be someone else is going to provide it for me, and I just have to be a good partner. So you've got to focus back full circle to relationships.
Mm-hmm.
You got to know how to do relationships. You let too much ego get in the way. You become too greedy. You want more significance. All those things are just partnership killers. When I do partnerships, I literally go into it like, if it doesn't work out, I'm willing to step away and give you the whole thing. If I think like that going in, then there's not that much risk for me mentally.
Right. Yeah. Have you ever heard of that book, Who Not How?
Mm-hmm.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
I recently read that. It pretty much says the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's not about how you're going to do something. It's about who you're going to use to do it with.
Yeah.
And then also
you're doing it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So many people are just doing the motion. And if you don't have a why, the passion dies, the energy dies, the enthusiasm, the excitement about something dies. It's gonna wither away, and that includes all the money that's attached to it. And if you're not passionate about something, if you're fired up about it, there's always gonna be abundance flowing through. Abundance is tied with excitement and enthusiasm. You lose that, stuff just goes out the door.
Yeah, I agree with you there. Well, thank you so much, Alex, for taking the time to explain everything of how you got into real estate and how you got into, you know, your debt fund and all that. There's a lot I learned from it. I know there's a lot I'm gonna be able to take away. I'll go home and watch the recordings and listen to the podcast again so I can learn. But thank you so much.
Yeah, of course.
We really appreciate it. And for those of you guys who don't know, this is Alex Lovely. Follow him on social media, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, everything.
Mm-hmm.
Again, master of real estate acquisition and creative debt financing. Mm-hmm. And anything else you want to bring up, Alex? Anything else you want to say?
No, just, you know, thank you for giving me this opportunity to share my message and for more people to get to know what it is that we're doing.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah,
we'll promote it for sure. I'll tell everyone I know about it.
And I'll promote it too. So we'll make it happen.
Awesome. All righty. Well, thank you, man. Appreciate it.
Sounds good.